It starts with a desire to live beyond the walls of mediocrity, outside the confines of normal. People who laugh at the ridiculous notion of comfort. It's a community of performers. People with a fire to build their own roads and control their own destiny. Welcome to The Chad Shipley Show. Hey everyone, Chad here, and good morning. It is an amazing morning. I feel unbelievable. I'm not sure why, but it's going to be a great day. Today's episode is with a truly remarkable person. I called him the health and wellness prodigy, but I'm not sure that name even does him justice. To see what this guy has been able to do in such a short amount of time, it's really unbelievable and inspiring. Not only did he create a business, he launched it into four different locations, and he's so successful because his depth of knowledge on health and nutrition and wellness, it's just, not only is it amazing how much he knows, his ability to simplify it for any person to be able to understand and articulate it is incredible. He is extremely well spoken, and I can't thank him enough for taking all the time that he took. We recorded this episode a couple of months back. It was a little over a two-hour episode, real late after he had worked all day with all of his clients. He had to come in and talk with me, and I'm so thankful because I released part one a couple months back. I split it into two different parts, and I released part one, which was very focused on the health and nutrition side, and we talked about, you know, me running the marathon and the prep before the marathon and things like carb loading versus the keto diet. All kind of great and fascinating information came out of that, and I kind of refer to that episode as a free consultation. And to be honest, both of these are sort of free consultation because he is breaking down so many different topics that we hear so much about, and he's giving you the knowledge from an expert perspective. So I constantly hear people talking about the ketogenic diet and how you should totally just cut carbs out of your diet and use fat as your fuel source. And I'm not sure that everyone talking about the ketogenic diet even realizes that that's what they're doing, or being fat adapted, or, you know, going on these carb restricted diets, or doing things like intermittent fasting. All of these things that we hear so much buzz about, it was really nice to hear him talking about what these things really mean and if they are something that you should actually be doing or not doing. And one of the things I love about Andrew is his company is called Case Specific Nutrition because it really is a case-by-case matter. Yes, there are probably some things that we can all do to just generally to live a healthier lifestyle. But when it comes to dieting, it really does depend on you, your body. You know, he talks a lot in part one about hormonal imbalances and how those people are going to require specific and prescribed diets that are not going to be good for the mass population. So if you are a person that has really struggled with this topic, I would definitely make sure you are listening to both of these episodes. Go back and check out part one. You will not be disappointed. I have some of my highest performing fitness friends came back to me and gave amazing feedback on that episode, saying that they learned so much, some even wanting to reach out to Andrew and talk with him because his way of explaining things will really sink in with you. I promise you will not be disappointed. And this is just a continuation of that conversation. So it was a really long discussion. I didn't want to publish a 2+ hour convo on a podcast. So I broke it into two different parts. And part two, we start out talking about his business, how he expanded into four different locations. One of those locations is actually, it has a fitness side combined with the health and wellness side. So that was really interesting to hear him talk through that. And then he comes back to the health and diet side. So we get into conversations like intermittent fasting and what intermittent fasting really means versus what the general population thinks it means. And I was just taken back by everything that Andrew explained and went through. It was by far the most I've ever actually learned during an interview. So I've had an amazing guest on, extraordinary guest, and we've talked about some fascinating topics, but I've never actually learned so much in a conversation as I have with Andrew Wade. And I will continue to use both of these episodes as tools going forward that I can use as references to come back to and listen to and point people to that really struggle with this kind of stuff. And it's sad to me because I see so many people out there talking about this diet or that diet, and they're at surface level. They might understand a few of the principles, but I don't know if they fully understand the total implications, right? What does it mean to actually be on a ketogenic diet? Most people that are doing it understand that you're switching your fuel source from sugar to fat, but is that the right thing that you should actually be doing? And it, you know, that's the kind of questions that were popping into my head as I'm hearing Andrew explain the way that we need to be thinking about diets and the way that we need to be thinking about food prepping and the way that we should be thinking about, you know, intermittent fasting and all of these things. So it was a wonderful conversation. I can't thank Andrew enough. And without further ado, I'm just going to let you listen to him because he sells himself. I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. Let's switch to the business side a little bit because I want to make sure that we talk about that.
Absolutely.
I'm fascinated. That's the piece that I'm really fascinated about. I have some background in this area. So let's start with where are we at now? So can you give us a little bit of a background of this place? I think this was the first.
Yeah.
Okay. So give us a backdrop of what is this? What do you do here? Who are the type of people that you're seeing? And then you mentioned the gym, if you can kind of go into the gym and some of the other areas that you've built up.
Perfect.
Talk us about your empire.
Hey, shameless business pitch. Here it comes. So I can paint the picture. So we are currently on Baum Boulevard in like the shady side, East Liberty corner, basically. This is the central office. And so here in the central office, we have two offices and a conference room. And this is, like you said, ground zero. This is the original office. This is where I started the practice. It's 2019, so I guess 5.5 years ago, which is kind of crazy. And we are a group of dietitians. And so the practice has grown over the years, and I can elaborate more on the, you know, how we've expanded. But basically, the company I have is Case Specific Nutrition. It's a group of dietitians, and we work with every type of case, hence Case Specific Nutrition, right? So we see about 500 patients a month right now, and they vary from my specialties, the athletes, the eating disorders, the metabolically complicated, to pediatric cases, to just generic healthy lifestyle, to vegan vegetarian, to people with crippling digestive issues, to people with kidney disease, people with heart disease, diabetes. You name it, if there is a medical nutrition intervention for it, our team works for it.
Yeah.
And our office here is the original one. There are two of us here full-time, and then we have two dietitians that come here sort of on contract, essentially. And then we have three other offices. So we have a South Hills location in Castle Shannon, which has a full-time dietitian and a part-time dietitian there. We have a North Hills location that has a full-time dietitian and a part-time dietitian. And then we have the East End location in Plum, which is where my wife and I live. And my wife, Allison, actually runs that office. She's also a dietitian. We met in college.
Okay.
And she runs that location. And we have one other contractor that comes through there. And so all in all, I believe there's 9 dietitians in the group, 5 of which are full-time. We have some contractors. Yeah. And then at the Plum location, we also have a gym. So that location is actually it's called Case Specific Wellness. And so it's a wellness facility. Instead of just being a dietitian office where people can sit down and talk through their nutrition things, we also have a personal training gym where we have a trainer who is a CSCS, which as a general guide is like the only level trainer I would ever hire from a professional standpoint. A lot of trainers, there's a lot of discrepancy in terms of the credentialing behind them. So going back to, you know, my credential as dietitian, that means I have 4-year degree, master's degree, residency. You know that anyone who claims to be a registered dietitian nutritionist has those things unless they were grandfathered in and they may not have a master's degree, but they at least have the 5 years. A personal trainer could be somebody that Googled personal training certificate and paid $29.95 to right. show where your bicep was.
Yeah.
Or it could be somebody that rigorously studies the subject. It could be somebody who has a an undergraduate degree in it. My guy, his name's Jeremiah. He is a CSCS. He has a bachelor's degree in exercise science. The CSCS is a strength and conditioning coach. It is the highest level. The exam is extremely rigorous. It includes all types of anatomy. It has nutritional components. It is an extensive book. And basically what that means is that he's not just somebody that can give someone training advice. He's also somebody that can assess for muscle asymmetry. He can work with physical therapists or alongside a physical therapist and help build and repair and help somebody build back stronger and, you know, more even and more balanced. He can work with flexibility. So he's not someone that's just going to write a workout routine. He's somebody that's going to really work people through to make sure that they're in less pain, they're more mobile, they have better balance. And so we opened that facility next door to a group, East Suburban Sports Medicine. They're a physical therapy group out in the East End, and they're a great group of physical therapists, and we aligned our personal trainer, Jeremiah, alongside them. So basically, as they're working with their clients and the clients get to the point where, hey, they're at range of motion, they've graduated, great, you know, have a good day, but also you can meet with Jeremiah if you'd like to continue it. You know, there's a lot of physical therapy clients, for example, that get done with knee surgery, as an example. Oh, you're at 120 degrees, you're back to normal mobility, but they're still having trouble getting in and out of their car, or they're still scared of going up and down the steps normally. And so the therapist can give them exercises for that and make sure they set them up the best they can. But once insurance stops paying, the physical therapist is a pretty expensive piece. Well, Jeremiah can step in as sort of that next of kin, right, that baton pass, and really work with them to go from recovered to strong to stronger, right? And he does that with people that are battling injuries, and he works with young athletes and old alike that are working with injuries, or just individuals that are looking to get stronger. A lot of our clients that are working on weight loss, he works with them. We run a boot camp there and, you know, do sort of like group workouts and sessions that way for accountability. So that facility is kind of an exciting thing. We opened that up this past year in our in our hometown. I'm not from Plum, but I call it my home now. Yeah. And my wife and I really wanted to do something cool for our local community, and we're hoping that it's something that, if the idea combines well, we can look to expand and, you know, offer gym opportunities at some of our other locations in the future.
Yeah. And who is actually coming to you? Where are they coming from? Are they getting sent by doctors, or are they high performing athletes who are trying to figure out how to get an edge? Or are you seeing even more just normal people like me taking an interest in nutrition and trying to figure out where to go? Like who?
All the above. Yeah, okay. So you do not need a doctor's referral to see a dietitian. We are considered a medical specialist, and we bill insurance as independent practitioners. It's worth noting that most people can actually see us through insurance, and it's covered very well, particularly if there's weight loss involved. But some insurances have coverage for just general nutrition counseling, and we have an admin that lets people know when they reach out what their out of pocket's going to be ahead of time, so they're not blindsided. That always drives me insane. Doc, you go to a doctor's office and they see you, and then you get a random bill for $500, and you're like, what? I wouldn't have gone had I known. And so our group, we always make sure we tell you, you will owe this much money from a visit with us, so right. that there's no blindsiding. But yeah, we have relationships with doctor's offices throughout the area. We have relationships with physical therapy groups. We have relationships with trainers. Since I do eating disorder counseling, I have some therapy groups as well. So not physical therapy, but actual psychological therapy. We have a ton of word of mouth, which I always say is, obviously our best testimonial is that right. clients tell other people that we're worth your time, yeah.
Every time I tell someone that I have a nutritionist coming onto the show or a dietitian, they're like, what's his name? And then I say, your name? And they're like, I know him.
I've been on Instagram, I'm Pittsburgh Dietitian, and that's why there's not a lot of male dietitians. There's a couple of us, and I think I know all the other ones in the area. So it's kind of easy for me to stand out. I can't claim to be a brilliant because I did that. I think being a partly being a guy in this area as a dietitian, because there are not a lot of them, and then I also like to talk, so it helps a lot. But so we get clients really referred from all over, a lot of word of mouth. I have athletes, and so I've worked with some sports teams, none of the professional sports teams, but I do work with individual professional athletes, but a lot of collegiate athletes and that kind of thing as well. So
how are you thinking about the scaling of the business? So what were the time frames in between? Like, Is it start with this one that we're in now, and then after you get certain point cash flow, you can start to reinvest and start building out? And where is that going? Are you looking to take this into, if you don't mind me asking, you don't have to answer if it's like a strategic secret.
My lawyer has advised that I plead the fifth.
and when I said like this is kind of like my backdrop, I meant on like the business side, trying to scale the business and try to figure that out. Not so much like, obviously, what you guys do as a business.
Absolutely.
I don't know much about that at all. And hopefully you and I can continue to work together so that I don't like crash in marathons anymore.
I got but, you.
Yeah, just scaling the business. Like, because if you opened this one 5.5 years ago and you've been able to build 4 cents and then add on a gym with a person that's doing the physical fitness side and partner with physical therapy, it seems like you've really scaled fast to get to this point.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out, how did you do that? And then where are you planning to go next? And maybe I can ask now, was outside funding a part of that? Like, did you take capital from outside investors to help scale the business? Or is it just because there's good cash flow, you know?
Yeah. And no, this was completely self-funded. There was no capital to start. To be honest, and I'll give you kind of the transparent rundown, as that is kind of how I'm wired. But
and this is where you being 28, 29?
28, yeah.
28 is, so to circle back to the beginning of the conversation where I was saying, you guys will see in a minute. Okay, so
basically what I did, and again, it's I will say, I can't claim brilliance. I think it's a mix of hard work and willingness to take action. But I told you earlier that I did my master's set up a little bit differently, right? I became a dietitian first, and then I specialized my master's. So when I finished, I became a dietitian, I was able to practice and counsel and all that stuff. So I said, you know what? I'm going to start counseling a little bit in my spare time while I get my master's degree. You know, it's a chance for me to make a little bit more money and supplement my education and all that good stuff. So I was 22, 23 when I started it. And I started, really, it was just a simple thing, as I found a guy that was willing to let me use a conference room and pay him basically rent per consult, right? And I started offering my services, started networking, handing out business cards, built a website, started writing blogs and trying to give out blogs to different websites, and just slowly but surely built a little word of mouth as I sort of networked my way through the area. And so Case Specific really started as me trying to supplement my income during my master's. It grew in that I started to find some networks that had some bigger client referrals, and then I started getting questions about insurance. And at that point, there really wasn't a lot of good coverage for dietitians. Medicare only covers diabetes and kidney disease, and pretty much all the private insurers were only covering that at the time. But because I had a couple contracts that were interested in the medical aspect and the insurance aspect, I actually got a network with insurances. So I basically tripped my way through becoming a credentialed medical provider. And I can't say it was smooth, but I figured it out, and that was a great thing. And lo and behold, the year that I did that, Highmark locally started their obesity prevention initiative, and they started allowing dietitians to offer nutrition counseling for obesity at a covered preventive rate, which means that really it didn't go to the deductible. There was coverage and someone could see me like 4 times a year. And so I started to develop clientele through insurance based on that. I started learning insurance, taught myself coding, got burned quite a bit. But over time, you know, really learned it well, then started to work on my health record, connected my health record with my third party biller, figured out a way to do that, because there really weren't a ton of private practice dietitians at the time. Some were cash only, but the acceptance of insurance was not a widely known thing. So I just sort of kind of tripped and fumbled my way through it. But I was a college student living off of $800 a month. So it wasn't like it was a big deal, right? Yeah. So I just basically kind of kept reinvesting. And by the time the first year of the business was done, I had to bring on my first 2 contractors. And I took a semester off of school so that I could get contractors set up and start the business contracts with a couple bigger groups that I had found. Wow. And the client load started growing. And by the time I finished my master's, I had multiple employees and had kind of worked my way through. Yeah. And I still mainly just had this office. And I had some contractors that were seeing clients at specific contract locations. Yeah. So like a pediatric dietitian at a pediatric office kind of thing. Right. And so that was sort of what I ended up with at the end of sort of like in 2015. And then in 2016, my wife and I, we finally got married, and she decided she wanted to join the practice. And so we, I had, at that point, I had developed a good relationship with a medical provider out in the Plum area, and they were referring a ton of patients to me, but I was down here in Shadyside, and I was already kind of seeing a ton of people. And so I said, you know what, let's open a Plum office, because my wife's from Plum, and that was a location that, you know, we eyed up eventually, and we thought we'd always live there. We were living in Shadyside at the time. And so I opened up an office for her out there, and she met with that group, and she became that group's referring dietitian and kind of started her clientele that way. So at that point, I had a couple contractors. My wife and I were working together, and we had two offices and then some sort of shared locations.
Yeah.
And then I started hiring full-time dietitians really at the end of 2016 is when the business got so big that I was at a point where I couldn't take any more people on.
Yeah.
And so I really started to, I basically looked at it, and the one thing that I did well is I'm a very financially conservative person, for better or for worse, right? There's pros and cons to that in the world of entrepreneurism, but especially at a younger age before I, because I didn't come from money, I was never given money, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I didn't have this silver spoon, and so I've always been very frugal. And it's, as my business senses have kicked in, I've, you know, become less risk averse, but also I've gotten better at mitigating risk, so it works very
right.
But so what I did is I basically looked at the amount that I was making and the amount that my, you know, that Allison was making and the amount that my contractors were making. And I said, you know what, I'm going to take a big hunk of this and I'm going to pay it forward into some employees. And every time an employee doubled their cost, I hired the next one and then hired the next one.
Okay.
And every time I hired one, I opened an office.
Yeah.
And so it got to a point where I had multiple dietitians and, you know, there was good cash flow, but I basically used the existing cash flow in the business and, you know, basically treated it as a business. My wife and I didn't take the amount that I was making and call that our lifestyle income and go and have like a lavish life at my 85-hour a week expense. I recognized that I was making great money, especially for a young guy, but I wasn't going to be able to work and run an entire operation that stopped when I left for my entire life. And so I started hiring and expanding, and we offer, you know, we now have an office administrator and, you know, my accountant is on a retainer, and, you know, the business exists independent of me.
Yeah.
I'm just a loud voice and hopefully, you know, a good role model and a good, you know, face of the business, so to speak. So, yeah, it's grown really well over the last couple of years. One of the things I've done recently is I have started building the licensing model. And so I'm kind of done with what I'd consider the full-time hiring. Not to say I would never hire a full-time person again, but I'm not really seeking to hire, employ, and manage the cash flow of all the next business, of all the next locations. But the other thing is we've kind of saturated Allegheny County. And so I started working with my dietitian in the North Hills, and her and I have been working on basically the licensing model of my practice, which is starts with a rigorous interview process because I'm very picky about who is going to represent my brand.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to find the team that I have.
Right.
And I have very selectively built this team so that we all offer very unique, very standardizable services amongst ourselves, right? We're all very skilled in similar things. We have our specialties that we're better at so that we can kind of communicate as a group. But not all, I can't just like randomly hire any dietitian. There's definitely a personality type and a skill set that needs to exist.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
So I spent a lot of time sort of ironing out what that looked like. And so right now, if a dietitian was interested in opening their own case specific, they could apply to do so. And I wouldn't really allow that to happen in Allegheny County. Allegheny County is case specific, you know, the central, but I have intentions of having an Erie and a Cleveland and a Columbus location and maybe a Philly location, in the coming years. So in the next 3 to 5 years, just like I have, you know, I've been able to build four local locations, I'd like to have five or more basically what we'll call regional locations.
Right.
And so that is what I've been building, and I'm at the point now where we have the legal documentation. We're in the middle of, we're almost finished with the overhaul of the website so that it's, you know, a better design for an office that basically bring, you know, asks you to pick the location before you land on the landing page and that kind of thing. in that, you know, my website's very highly ranked with SEO. And so the thought is that I've created this business that, you know, ranks well, has good brand recognition, has a good reputation, has a ton of materials, and, you know, offers a lot to a dietitian that wants to be a motivated practitioner to inspire a lot, you know, people to change their lives. And I've been able to build a way to basically automate that. I've also tacked on I wrote an 80-page how to start your own practice guide. Oh, wow. That is actually for sale, and people that want to open their own private practice can actually go on my website and buy it. It's not cheap because it's literally all that tripping and stumbling and self-teaching that I mentioned, the thousands of hours I've put into figuring out what I created. It is that blueprint. But as a part of the franchise of franchisees or licensees, they actually get that guide. They get me as a mentor. You know, they get access to all case specific branded resources. They get obviously our mobile app, you know, Rate My Day. They get our blog. They get all our highly ranked website stuff. So they get access to a really awesome, what we'd call business related family. Yep. And I have to do that. And the reason why is in the world of insurance, it's almost impossible for me to scale beyond Pennsylvania without it. And it's, you know, the rationale behind that is you have to be licensed in the state. And so if I wanted to open an office in Ohio, I would first have to be licensed there, which means first I'd have to have a location there. So if I have to go out, get a location, get licensed, which takes a little while, takes a couple months, and then get credentialed by the insurances, which takes a couple months, and you don't actually know what the insurances cover until you're in network with them. Right. So I could basically go out there, rent a building, pay a couple grand, and then find out that there's not insurance coverage for what I want to do. And so I'm building this licensing model so that a dietitian that lives in Columbus can use their home address as their initial location, get in network, figure out what's covered, and then based on that, invest.
Yeah,
right. So it's that risk mitigation that I mentioned before. And so I'm trying to find and screen for highly motivated, highly passionate dietitians that are looking to create their own path and work with our team, but are also excited and hungry to really see what model can be built. Yeah. And I'm happy to be their business mentor.
Yeah, that's really smart. So they'll go off and figure off a couple pieces.
And I'll walk them through how to do just that.
Right. And then if all the things map out, then you say, okay, well then here's what the investment would be into my business. And then they get the brand and they get all the content and the material and everything that goes with it.
And then I take a certain percentage. And then from there, my my billing and administrative services are also a licensable item. So they can choose to have their own billing situation set up, or they can actually work through my billing group. And, you know, that's just like a tack on to the overarching fee. But so that is the vision. And part of it's because I'm very passionate about the reality that the biomedical model of care, which is what I kind of said earlier, right? It's that simple model of patient presents with acute problem and then fix is given to that acute problem with no real recognition of like where that came from. Right. So I like to say, you know, patient shows up with stab wound, give them Band-Aid, right? That's kind of like how our model of health works. My business is in really what you'd consider the biopsychosocial model. And so it's the idea of looking at someone's health from biologic factors, psychological factors, and social factors, and recognition that health exists when all of those things are in balance.
Right.
And so it's a lot more of a thorough approach to care. It's a lot more of a passionate approach, but more importantly, it's really what dietitians are trained for. Dietitians have traditionally been in a clinical setting where it's not to say dietitians are not important in that setting. They are absolutely necessary, and we will, you know, I mean, especially with like tube feeds and parenteral nutrition and all sorts of end of life things and, you know, life-saving things. But the other area where dietitians are really trained and where a lot of my expertise is in motivational interviewing, right? Is the science of behavior change and motivation and inspiration. And if that is going to exist, that does not exist in a 15-minute appointment.
Right.
That does not exist in a 20-minute, you know, outpatient appointment or in a 10-minute check-in when you knock on the door of a patient in a hospital and they're exhausted and have been talking to nurses and doctors all day.
Yeah.
Dietitians are meant to be the preventive aspect, and private practice is where that can exist. It's where that can flourish, because I'm not giving you a handout that was written in 1973 that's been copy-pasted by a big company, right? We are building our own custom resources to give you the advice. We're building custom programming for each person. We're working with that individual to meet them where they are and optimize who they are given their current reality and obstacles. Right. And that is where health truly comes from. And so I want to be a part of the movement towards, one, changing our healthcare system, right? Which is why we offer I can write scripts for labs for my patients, right, to make it easier so they don't have to wait 5 months to go to their doctor to get their A1C. I can write the script and we can just manage that here. And if we need a doctor for a medication or some sort of advanced test or, you know, computed image or whatever, absolutely, go and do that. But if they're in a good state of health, just trying to keep their stuff together, I can be their center of care, right, in a lot of ways. And so, you know, working towards making dietitians a bigger central role in preventive health, and then also giving dietitians the access to practice that way, because that is not something that's existed, but it is starting to increase and improve. Yeah. And I've been fortunate in that I've been able to trip over some really cool opportunities and, you know, be smart enough to at least recognize them and run with them. And I don't know that I even really fully realized what I was running with until it had started to happen. And I went, holy crap, what have I done? But because of that, I feel like I am somewhat indebted to my profession to figure out ways to bring more people with me.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's jump to OptiLife.
Yeah.
And can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So OptiLife is my brainchild. I'll give the background of it. Basically, the thought behind it is it's an online course to simplify it. But really what happened was, I guess it was 3 years ago now, I reached my max capacity client load. I was working 85 legitimate hours a week, like loggable hours. That's not an exaggerated hours. I was working way too much. And I realized that I couldn't see any more people than I was currently. And more importantly, I started doing the math. And at that point, I was seeing about 65 clients a week plus 20 hours of billing and admin because I hadn't hired that and I didn't know how to delegate. I was a true do-it-yourselfer. I had a lot of learning about business, right? I was only 24, so give me a break. But I had this realization that at 65 people a week, if I did that for the rest of my career, from 24 to 70, I would only see 10% of Allegheny County's population. And I went, wait a second, that is like the worst legacy. Here lies a man who worked 90 hours a week and helped no one,
yeah,
right? And so I went, I've got to build a better mousetrap. And so I set off on this, what you're currently seeing, which is this, I had this big brainstorm session. I was traveling, actually.
Well, not to interrupt you, but the reason I love that, the reason I was laughing is because most people would be thinking about it as, how much does that equate to in dollars, right?
Oh, yeah, so like, yeah, absolutely.
So how
yeah.
many people am I going to see for this many years, and what is that going to equal from a financial perspective? And you're like, wait a minute, I'm not helping enough people.
Yeah.
I got to go build an online course that can scale.
Yeah, no, it's, and I will say that I've been somebody that I've always been very legacy driven. And I firmly believe that financial wellness is a direct result of impact.
Yeah.
And so if I help millions of people, sure, I will absolutely be financially well off.
It's a value-based approach.
But I by no means feel entitled to financial success because I'm smart or hardworking.
Yeah, right.
I have to be intelligent and action-oriented and create something of value before I can be rewarded. Right. That is capitalism, right? So,
And just on that really quickly, my friend Pat and I talk about him a lot. He actually helps me a lot with this show. We talked a lot about value-based pricing, right? So you can't get into this conversation in a lot of areas of the world, like marketing, for example. You can't get into a conversation around, I'm going to work for this price per hour, right?
Yeah.
Because there's not enough hours in the day to make any real money.
Yep.
It's how much is this worth to you?
Yeah.
And I'm going to take a piece of that
for
building it for you, right?
Yep.
So it's a very value-based approach. But I thought that that was really interesting that even your whole approach around the legacy, you know, there's an old proverb that says the wisest people on earth are those that plant the trees that they never get the shade from or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically thinking about like future generations and where you left a real footprint on the world.
Yeah,
so
it's that giver.
That's commendable.
Mindset.
I thought it was hilarious.
Well, like, I appreciate that.
Someone that's actually like authentic and cares about people.
Rare, right? But yeah, so basically I had that realization and I went, I'm only going to be able to help 10% of Allegheny County. And to your point, I said, okay, if I'm going to invest 85 hours a week of my life into helping people, I'd like to leave more of a mark, right? Because financially speaking, working that much, I was making money that my wife and I would have been very comfortable living on. And so I had no complaints about that side of it. But the reality was that was a lot of hours invested and it didn't have the legacy that my ego really wanted. And so I can't even claim that the legacy is completely selfless, right? Because it is the ego stroke. So what I did is I was traveling and I outlined my vision of what I needed to do to help as many people as possible. And I recognized that there was a professional component, which was basically training dietitians in an area, basically in the private practice model, so that dietitians could pursue a model that allowed them to more effectively help people, which is obviously what I've done in writing my How to Start Your Own Practice guide, creating my licensing model, and hiring other dietitians. And then from there, the other piece was I needed to find a way to detach from my hourly rate. Yeah. Right. So detach from that, I can work this many hours. That means I can see this many people. And once again, that came to, I need to hire more dietitians and expand locations. And I also need to create a tool that is accessible to those who can't come to our locations.
Right.
And at that time I was working with a friend of mine. He actually has the same last name as me. His name's Ryan Wade, colleague of mine. We're not actually related. He is also a CSCS, so really highly sought after trainer, owns a business here in Pittsburgh, and really helps a lot of people. And him and I had been working on this habits seminar together, which was basically an in-person all-day seminar that discussed the nutrition and exercise and how habit building and motivation can sort of, change and build lives, in a positive manner. And we had this really successful habit seminar. We had like 55 people in attendance and it got great reviews. And we looked at each other and we said, we've got to figure out a way to like videotape this or record this or something. And, and like have it on YouTube or have it available. And so I brought in our third co-founder, Travis Grubeski, who has some background in the world of online course creation and management and some SEO stuff and all that good stuff. And the three of us sat down and started talking through this idea of an online course that had motivating, engaging modules. And so over the next 2 years, we started shooting videos, writing content, creating it. And last year we launched it. And the OptiLife Academy is a 20 module online course that goes through nutrition and exercise and the habit building around them. And the nutrition section goes through sort of like diet culture and navigating that, sort of nutrition 101, and then a lot of like personal motivation and mindset. So instead of saying like, eat this, not that, it's a lot of what I do in a consult. I tell people that the nutrition section is a lot like seeing me. You're going to hear a lot of the similar pitches and perspectives that I would give to a person if I sat down with them one-on-one. I'm not going to give them templated tools. I'm going to give them actionable items that allow them to change their mindset, which inspires a change in behavior, right? So it's a more of a behavior-based course. And then Ryan runs the exercise section, which goes through foam rolling, stretching, deep breathing, cardiovascular training, foundational movement patterns for basically improved strength and flexibility and balance, and then modifications for neck, hip, back, shoulder, knee pain. And basically by the end of the course, the people will have a really good understanding from a nutrition perspective of sort of the quirks of the diet culture that exists, some of the misconceptions and myth busting in the cultures that exist, some of the mindsets and tools that can help them become more aware, like my projection reflection and some of those kind of things we talked about. Some of that appears in this course. And then they'll be able to go through Ryan's section and not only understand how to do those things, but have 10-minute plans for each thing, a 10-minute deep breathing routine, a 10-minute stretch routine, a 10-minute foam roll routine, but then also a comprehensive balance routine that works them through the foundation movement patterns alongside all those things so that they breathe better, they have better flexibility, better mobility, so that they can do whatever it is, whether it's be pain-free as a otherwise sedentary person or whether it's the base for an athlete that's trying to keep injury, keep from injury. Yeah. And so the course exists in video content, all the videos, there's about 50 of them and they're like 2 to 5 minutes long. So they're short snippets. I'm talking in the nutrition sections as if I'm talking to a client, and they're meant to be short and sweet. So even though I'm a very wordy person, I tried to be concise. And then Ryan's he's on the mats and actually like working through in the gym and showing you how to do the form, showing you different things.
These are individual, and you're going corporate with these as well.
Correct. So. Yeah. So basically the way we built it is, it's people go through the course, they watch the videos, they download the action sheets, they work through the course. It would take 6 to 8 hours to do the whole thing in one sitting, but there's sections that are broken up. It's meant to be done over the course of about 6 weeks.
Is it by both of them? Or can you buy one without the other? Or can you buy them together?
You can, if you're just going to buy it for you, it's $59.99 to buy one section. So the nutrition section or the exercise. And once you buy it, you get permanent access. So you get, I think the nutrition section has 25 downloads in terms of handouts, grocery lists, food, recipes, like everything you could want, a bunch of articles. And then if you buy both of them, it's $99. Yeah. And so it ends up being, again, for lifetime access to a lot of materials you can watch over and over again. And then we do have a corporate wellness model. So we actually have contracts with a couple companies now where they offer this as an incentive to their, basically to their employees. Yeah. Right. And their employees go through the course and they're able to print out a certificate at the end.
Yeah.
And we're able to actually track outcomes and de-identify them.
Yeah.
And most recently, we were really excited. We just got through our first 100 sample of like a group of 100 kind of thing. That was all from one group, and we analyzed it, and some of the key metrics that we saw that actually were statistically significant. There's some that we need more than 100 people to, you know, from a statistical perspective, but the average across the group was the average person lost 13% of their body weight in 4 months.
Jeez.
And 10% is considered significant weight loss medically, and so 13% weight reduction was the average weight reduction per person. There was a 12% increase in reported sleep. There was a 28% increase in produce, fruits, vegetables, that kind of thing, and then an overall 33% increase in reports of energy. So we've got some really good metrics showing that this course is meant to change the mindset, meant to drive awareness. And what's nice is it's affordable, it's accessible to anybody. It's on your phone, it's on your computer, you can do it in your pajamas, and if you work night shift, it doesn't matter, you can do it whenever you need to. And so that was really one of the next pieces of, again, my legacy build, right? Was how can I work with people that couldn't see me otherwise? How can I make an impact beyond what I can do physically?
I love it for the affordability alone, because I mean, with like, because obviously you are very well knowledge in this very complex area.
Yeah.
So to be able to extract and synthesize that knowledge out into something that you can pay $60 for, to me is a huge win. Because I mean, if you were to go, so the personal trainer, and nothing against personal trainers, but the person that, you know, takes the $800 certification and becomes your personal trainer, you're going to pay that person more than getting this kind of knowledge,
this permanent knowledge.
For companies, you know, I have a couple smaller companies, founders that are building their companies. I'm actually going to take this to them as a, hey, this could be a really good affordable option for some of your employees if you're trying to get them those one-up benefits.
Exactly.
That you know, because that's a lot of employees are looking for that kind of stuff these days, right? I'm actually taking it to my firm, trying to get them to sponsor this wellness program.
Well, and we try and price it. And as you know, I mean, we charge like $50 per person for a corporate. So if a company comes in, they have 100 people and it's 50 a person. I mean, that's, it barely makes a dent, especially when you compare it to, and that's, you know, when we discuss the pricing of it, you know, we poured so many hours into this. I mean, it took, you know, again, I work crazy hours. Ryan works crazy hours. Travis works crazy hours. And so we were, you know, at this office a lot of times at 11, 12 o'clock at night shooting videos. And, you know, over a 2-year span, I don't even want to know how many hours we poured into it, but we created this thing and it became our baby and we were super proud of it. So when it came time to discuss pricing, this initial thought was like, well, shit, this took forever. This has to be like $500. Exactly. Like we're thinking $1 million. Exactly. And then we went, wait a second, step back. What is the purpose of this?
Right.
And the purpose of this is accessibility, right? It's meant to be the thing that people can do instead of me. So I shouldn't charge them more than what it would cost to see me. And so we looked at the pricing of it and we realized, okay, Ryan and I, both of our like out of pocket rates, right? Or like for people that have to pay cash are like 150 for an initial as a point of reference.
Yeah.
So we look at it and we go, okay, so if we were 300 as a package for the initial consult and we do this for 100, that is a nice, you know, basically reduction, because it's not as customized. It's more of the mindset. You don't get like, you know, sort of the, you know, as much pizzazz as you would one-on-one, but it's meant to be engaging, fun, quick, and, you know, really meant to, you know, really get the mind thinking in you know, a lot of good ways.
And so, it's invaluable. I mean, for people like me, to go back to the beginning of the conversation, I'm training for a marathon. I have no idea what I'm doing.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Like just to get a little bit of input from someone that actually knows what they're talking about. I mean, finally, my friend Lauren Schaefer, I talk about her all the time. I think I reference her to you. She's the one that's, she's a very high competitive runner.
Mm-hmm.
And she finally said, like, stop what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was good that she did, because I was just going to hurt myself. But to have that kind of knowledge, and even for the person, you know, I was telling you that someone texted me today saying, hey, I ran 2 miles. For that person to have a little bit of an understanding around what the nutrition is actually doing to them when they're running that 2 miles, and not to be working against themselves, right?
Yeah, it's a big deal.
So, you know, I, like I said, my sister, her and I have had a lot of conversations around this. we have more conversations around what to stop eating, or what, you know, try to stop eating the restaurant, stop eating the fried food, don't eat the fast food. But when it comes to really thinking about what you should be eating and how you should be thinking about nutrition and all of those quick insights that you give in the videos, that's where there's huge value there, right?
Absolutely. So. And that's where, like you said, you know, you've mentioned a couple of times, you know, the idea of simple versus complex carbs, processed package versus quality. And that's the kind of stuff I dig into in that. I go through a lot of the common terminology so that people can understand the distinction. And you know, it's funny because that's actually, you know, doubling back to that keto conversation that we had a little bit ago. One of the things I mentioned that was unnecessary is that a lot of people in the United States, right, eat a very processed and packaged diet. So it's things that are, you know, they come in a box, they have added preservatives, they're stripped of their fiber content, they have a bunch of added refined pressed oils.
Yeah.
And so the nutritional quality is not really there. And as a result, the body doesn't digest it very well, the body doesn't receive it very well, and so we don't get a lot from it. And what's funny is the reason a lot of people go keto and have success isn't because they eliminate carbohydrates, it's because they eliminate processed food, right? They go from a diet that's has Easy Mac and pizza to a diet that has only vegetables and meat. And what's funny is along the way, they also get rid of blueberries and sweet potatoes and oatmeal. And I don't know a person on this planet that eats blueberries, oatmeal, and sweet potatoes and is, you know, gaining rapid weight from it, right? Unless they have a crazy hormonal issue. And so we recognize, like, keto is, earlier I said it was one step past necessary. Most people should go on what I call a slow carb diet, which is a diet that mostly removes, right, as a baseline, processed and packaged foods. So sticks to fruits, vegetables, all fair game. Whole grains and starches that actually are like come from, you know, you can look at a potato and say that was from the ground. Sweet potatoes, you know, rice and quinoa in their, you know, in their brown rice and, you know, whole seed form for the quinoa. Oatmeal, those types of things have their fiber. They have their integrity. They are complex carbs. They're going to digest slowly. They're going to trigger fullness receptors in the body. They're going to regulate digestion. They're going to stabilize blood sugar. They're not going to lead to hunger, where refined sugary foods like desserts and packaged and processed crackers and chips and snack foods, those things stimulate hunger. They stimulate appetite. They don't offer any sort of fiber. They don't drive any sort of satiety. They actually make us eat more. Yeah. And so it's funny because a lot of the diets, whether it be keto or paleo or Whole 30, you name any of the extreme diets that are out there, all of them do the same thing. They remove the crap, the processed foods, the packaged foods from the normal day-to-day diet. They force you to eat only foods that are like naturally occurring from the ground. And guess what happens? Your inflammation improves, your energy improves, your blood sugar stabilizes. And then all of them, just because they need to be unique from a marketing perspective, take it one step further. And so keto causes weight loss in people that can't lose weight. It'll cause weight loss in most people too. That said, most people could just stop eating the crap and still eat like blueberries and oatmeal and feel even better, have even more energy, and lose just as much body fat. They may not lose the first 15 pounds in the first 2 weeks, but that's not fat loss. That's the water weight and the carbs that are in your muscles and your liver to keep your body stable, getting flushed out. So people are like, I lost 15 pounds and then I stopped. Well, you weren't actually losing fat. And so, you know, that's where in OptiLife and in our, you know, in our consultations, one of the things we do is we work with people on understanding diet quality. And to what you said earlier, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, what are the tips for convenience? And, you know, we talked a little bit about meat prep and trying, you know, and I talked about the convenience versus entertainment eating at restaurants. But one of the hardest parts is that most often, convenience sacrifices quality.
Yeah.
That's not always the case, but the reality is...
It is for me.
And one, it's what I mean is in terms of like food at like a store or food at a restaurant, right? Like most of the time, if it's quick, that means that something had to be sacrificed to get it to be quick, right? So sorry if I didn't say that correctly. And so that's what's so tricky is it's not to say that it's impossible to eat conveniently and well. And that's part of the reason why I tell people about plan A, plan B, plan C. Because a lot of times if you're going to have convenience, you're missing something, right? Yeah, so like, you know, you go from that thing you made at home that's like really, really good, high quality food of, you know, nice quality ingredients. And then your plan B is you go to Panera and you get a salad and you get a sandwich on a whole wheat bread. And it's could we critique some little things and say, oh, that's not like, that's not perfect. Sure, but that's not really the goal, right? That's still a better option than X, Y, or Z. Yeah. And if we let that option combine with all the other choices of the day, that's really what can show us what your true health is, right? Like if you eat a donut every day, people go, oh, wow, that's an unhealthy food. Okay, but what's the rest of your day look like? I encourage people to think about their pile of food, right? So quality is always a priority. Convenience foods can always exist. But if you want to take a really look at your health, look at how often, if you think about this as a thought experiment, at the end of the week, if you piled up everything you ate all week into a giant pile in the corner, what would you be looking at? Right? Would you be looking at, yeah, exactly. Would you
talk about visuals?
Yeah, exactly. Would you be looking at, you know, of some lean protein sources, some vegetables, some fruits, some whole grains, some nuts, some seeds, some avocados, and then a donut and some ice cream and a couple other little things? Or would you be flipping that, right? Yeah. Would it be mostly convenience crap? And that is the spectrum of health. Yeah. Recognizing that the goal is never to get to a point where all you do is eat food that is like completely untouched and processed, right? That's not a necessary extreme. The extreme is to get you away from the current spectrum in the United States, which is that of all processed.
Yeah.
And the farther along you can get over to that quality food, real food side, the better that pile looks, right? That is really what defines your level of health in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to ask you one last question.
Ooh.
Before your next appointment, which is probably your wife wondering where the hell you're at.
She might be asleep, so it's probably my dogs that want attention. But I'm ready.
Last question. We'll wrap up. Intermittent fasting, just because it's such a, it's again, it's like the keto, right? It's becoming more and more popular. I've heard a lot of people speak, you know, nothing but great things about it if they're on a very disciplined plan. Can you just explain what is intermittent fasting and your viewpoints on when it's good, when it's bad, if it's ever good, if it's ever bad?
Oh, perfect. So intermittent fasting is not a singular thing. That's the first and most important point. People say they're intermittent fasting, and most people don't actually understand what intermittent fasting is. Once again, it is a strategy used to reset leptin, which is a hormone that makes us feel full, in people who have high fasted leptin. A way to think about it is if you've been someone who restricts calories for too long or you're obese, over time, your leptin level, which basically what happens, you eat a meal, your leptin spikes, that makes you feel full or satisfied, but then that also revs up your metabolism so that your body can burn that food. And over time, people that have excess body fat and also people who are overly restrictive on their diet, their leptin levels start to creep up in their bloodstream even when they're not eating. So it's kind of like the boy who cried wolf. Over time, when they eat a meal, the leptin doesn't spike anymore, which means the metabolism doesn't spike. So it's broken. Intermittent fasting is the idea of fasting long enough to allow the leptin that's fasted to drop, and then as a result, you eat a more significant meal, which allows the leptin to spike more significantly, and then you fast again, and then you spike. And so it's basically retraining leptin to work to reset metabolism. That's really the main thought behind it. Fasting also, because you're in a fasted state, drops your fasted insulin. And insulin is basically a hormone that says food is coming, don't burn fat, and it inhibits fat loss. So there's a hormonal rationale to use intermittent fasting. That said, the baseline, there's multiple parts. The base of intermittent fasting is not intermittent fasting, and it's not unique, and it's not new. It's the idea of eating in a window.
Yeah.
Right? Which is... okay, I don't think anybody 10 years ago thought that eating 18 hours a day was a good idea,
right?
So like the concept of keep food in a 12-hour span or less is not in itself intermittent fasting.
Yeah. I do it on accident.
That's my point, is it's common sense, right? And you can even look back in the 50s before restaurants existed and technology existed, the average family ate at like 7 or 7:30, had a lunch at noon, and then the average commute was 15 minutes, so dinner was on the table at 5:30 or 6. People ate in a 10-hour span for hundreds of years, right? From the time we had like basically an agricultural model to right before we had the like whole fast food model, women enter the workplace, processed food, industrial revolution, you know, boom of tech, right? There was a period of time where we just ate in a 10-hour span, and then we started working longer hours and using snacks, and then snacks led to more snacks because snacks don't fill you up. And so we've transformed over the last 40 years, really, maybe even 50 years, to a society that instead of eating three meals and then having like ice cream as dessert on a Friday, we now eat a breakfast snack that doesn't quite get us to lunch. So then we eat a snack in the mid-morning, and then we eat a lunch, but we're usually busy, so we eat a snack at lunch, and then we snack in the afternoon because lunch didn't make it to dinner, and then we get home and we graze until we eat dinner, and then we're bored and exhausted and tired, so we graze all night. And so the baseline of intermittent fasting is stop eating all the freaking time, because there's no world that that's useful, yeah, right? That's the baseline, is put your food in some freaking piles and keep them a few hours apart so your body can digest them and figure out what the hell to do with the food. Right. From there, if you have hormonal issues, shrinking that intermittently or occasionally is a good idea. So going back to that leptin reset, people benefit from a 16-8, which is 16 hours of fasting, 8 hours of feeding. And in that 8 hours, eating like two larger meals and potentially one snack. Right. And that allows leptin to spike, insulin to function, insulin to drop, leptin to spike. It's kind of like training wheels for your hormones, right? If you are a lean, fit, athletic individual, you have no business doing a 16-8 fast. It has no physiologic benefit to you. Now, before the people that are all about anti-aging get on me, I will say that there's another type of fast that can be useful for that. But 16-8 fasting is metabolically focused. Yeah. And so most of us that are, again, in really what we'd call like a more normal state of health, keeping food in a 12-hour span, great idea. If it's in a smaller window, fine. If there's occasional day here and there where it's in an 8-hour span, also good. But the 8-hour, the 16-8 is mainly for people interested in basically shifting their metabolism. And then from there, you have the extensions to that fast, the intermittent part. Intermittent doesn't mean daily. It means sporadically or occasionally. Yeah. So the idea is that you pick your base, whether it's 12 hours, 10 hours, or 8 hours, and then a couple times a week, you extend that fast. And so somebody who has a 12-hour window and is really athletic might benefit from having an off day where they fast 18 hours and then only have a 6-hour eating window and they eat a couple times, right? You know, days where they train and exercise, not a good idea. Muscle inflammation and all that stuff, not a great call. But the purpose of that extended fast is not really well proven yet, but the research is showing us that your digestive tract gets less inflamed. It can actually help some inflammation. It can improve growth factors in the body, which can actually help muscle recovery, particularly on a rest day. And then the anti-agers out there are all excited because there's a little bit of research showing that your telomeres, which are basically like the plastic end of your shoelace, but of your DNA, that thing degrades over time. And that's kind of why we're not immortal. And so the telomeres actually don't degrade as aggressively as a result of fasting occasionally, not daily, but occasionally. So the theory is that it reduces telomere degradation, which extends lifespan. Not proven yet, but definitely an interesting thought process for sure. And so for the typical person, I would say you don't intermittent fast. You watch your spread of food is what that is. Keep your food in a 10 to 12 hour span. Don't tell people you're intermittent fasting, because that's not intermittent fasting. That's the base to then intermittent fasting, which is having a periodic fast of an extended time frame.
So the 10 to 12 window means if I start at 9 or 10 in the morning, right?
9 to 7 or 10 to 8.
Okay,
Yep, exactly.
And so then you would only eat in the window, and then outside of that window, you would allow your body to basically digest and rest and recover.
And sip fluids, and as long as they don't have sugar in them, right? So water or tea or whatever. And what's funny is when you think about that, right? Like, the real benefit behind that for most people is because going back to what I told you about before, the projection. If you know tomorrow I eat between 9 and 7. And I'm done at 7. What are you going to do next? When do I eat at 9 and 7? Well, at 9, I'm going to have breakfast. I'm going to be hungry, so I better eat this. Well, then I'm going to need lunch at noon, and I'll probably need a snack at 3, and then I'm going to have dinner by 7. Done. Like, it's not that it's this, like, you know, this science experiment that blows people's minds. It's literally organization at base. So intermittent fasting gives people a spread and a cutoff, and people like to be directed. And so it gives them that. It's no difference than me saying, hey, try and have dinner and be done by 8 p.m. But the idea is you eat in a 10-hour window. And so us millennials really like to sound creative. I saw a meme the other day that was like, it was like, millennials are so creative. They skipped breakfast and called it intermittent fasting. And it just like made my day, because it is true. Like, the what our society is calling intermittent fasting isn't intermittent fasting. Yeah, it's right. just keeping your food in a, they basically like a planned spread.
Yeah.
And that's where if you decide you're going to eat 11 to 7, what's the first thing you do? What am I going to eat at 11?
Right.
Well, compare that to the person that doesn't plan. They get out of bed, they eat a granola bar because they're supposed to have breakfast. And then by the time they get to 11, they're ravenous and they settle for pizza. The version of you that knows you're eating at 11 and packs a salmon salad.
Right.
Yeah, they're a healthier individual. And would I rather you eat a salmon salad at 11 for breakfast rather than a granola bar at 6 a.m.? Absolutely every freaking time I'd rather that happen. And so the baseline is know how many piles you eat your food in and know when your piles come in. And so it's basic timing of meals. And meal timing has been, Renaissance periodization, which is meal timing basically, has existed for 25 years. And so the real intermittent fasting, which is one of those bases that then has 2 days of like 20 to 24 hour to eventually 36 hour fasts, has hormonal discussions associated with it. And again, I work with people on that, but it's a result of me writing a script for their labs, pulling their labs. I had a client that they weren't losing weight and they were being very compliant and eating at a deficit that should have elicited weight loss. And we pulled their labs and your leptin level really should be like, they say under 20, but realistically, if you're fasted, it should be under 9. And his was 107. And it was like, oh, that's why you're not losing weight. Yeah. So we're going to start intermittent fasting immediately. And the following month, the first month he lost 0 pounds. Month two, he lost 16.
Yeah.
And the difference was intermittent fasting. Yeah. Once again, though, does that mean if it worked for him, it'll work for me? No. Do you have that hormonal issue? And so that's really, you know, when I say case specific nutrition, that's maybe a little bit of a case study blip of what I mean by that. I'm not opposed to any diet, but the reality is most diets have a niche that they apply to. And my job as the consultant is to sit down with you, learn who you are, learn your reality, learn your struggles, and then give you considerations based on what would make you optimal.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
That's probably a good place to end. I came into this with hoping that I'd impress you.
You drank your Fiji.
With my big Fiji water bottle.
Yeah.
But now I realize I probably drank too fast. And I drank all of this water, which I should not have done.
I didn't quite finish mine, right? I'm close, but didn't quite get there.
It's so funny because you haven't been drinking this whole time. Like you take little sips and I'm sitting here chugging it. Fiji water. Anyway, man, this has been awesome. Where can people find you if they want to check you out? Your website, is that the best place?
Best place is definitely the website. I am on Facebook, but casespecificnutrition.com. We are Case Specific Nutrition on Facebook and Instagram. We're Case Specific PGH on Twitter. And then if you want to follow me in particular on Instagram, I am a Pittsburgh Guyatician. It's G-U-Y-A-tician. Our website has our contact email and our phone number. It directs you to our admin. And again, she can basically talk to you, answer questions you have about what we do based on what your interests are. She can get you connected with the right dietitian.
Yeah.
Check insurance, get you scheduled, all that good stuff. But don't be afraid to reach out to us, send us messages, ask us questions. That's what we're here for.
What is an initial consultation? Is that they would just come in and kind of walk through with them?
Yeah, so typically an initial consult it's usually 75 to 90 minutes, and we sit down and we do a deep dive into who they are. So, you know, what they do for a living, what their time of day, you know, what their schedule is throughout the day, you know, what their goals are, what their medical conditions are, if any. I try and basically live a week in their life and understand who they are, where their stresses come from, all that stuff. And then from there, we build a plan together. So, you know, that might include a meal plan, that might include a couple awareness techniques, that might include some exercise considerations, that might include some stress management, time management, might include some supplements if we're dealing with some metabolic issues or some micronutrient deficiencies or some other suspicious things. I might write some labs. There's clients that I utilize genetic testing for if there's some, you know, confusion there as to, you know, what the body really would be most responsive to. So the initial consult's a chance to get to know them, have them get to know me, and then build the base of our plan. And then typically we build it, we put it in play, we check in via email weekly as it sort of gets implemented, and then we sit down in 4 to 6 weeks and sort of review, assess, adjust, and build. I always tell people my job is not a light switch. You don't walk in and then walk out and just, you know, done. My job is to help you optimize over time and do it in a permanent manner. And so we identify the base and we give education and we build. So it's not this pass fail model of like, didn't do what I was supposed to the first month, I'm a failure. No, it's why didn't we? What's going on? You know, it's a perpetual positive mindset. What can we do to improve health consistently?
It's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I feel bad keeping you here in the office so
late.
Don't
apologize.
This has been awesome, man. I really appreciate it.
So yeah. I usually work this late as is, so I appreciate it.
Cool. And, that was awesome. Thank you so much.
I like to talk, so
I appreciate it, man. All right. Well, take care. Thanks, everyone.